pros, babes, and buds who bask in being bold and a bit of bizarre and beseeching brilliance. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly, well, kind of, quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 193. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and behold, we are your belated and backlogged boobers, but back for boosting brain waves.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
And today's show is brought to you by Penn State World Campus. Learn how Penn State World Campus can help you reach your educational goals by visiting worldcampus.psu.edu. We all like learning, and Penn State World Campus allows you to earn your degree from nearly anywhere in the world through convenient, flexible, and online format, and offers 125 graduate and undergraduate degrees and certificates online. So again, learn how Penn State World Campus can help you reach your educational goals, learning the things you want by visiting worldcampus.psu.edu. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Karen, hello.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's Karen. That's Karen.
You didn't recognize her with her big gray beard.
Yeah, no.
like Rip Van Winkle.
Let me feel your face so I can know you.
Man. How's everybody?
Not bad.
Doing good.
Yeah, we've had a lot going on.
But we are back.
With a vengeance. Actually, no, we have no vengeance. We're just back. We're just back to be nerdy and share some fun.
I mean, we've been hanging out.
Yeah.
Off podcast.
Right. And that's typically whenever we post a picture of us hanging out, somebody's like, you can just turn on a recorder. Just put a mic on the middle of that table.
You guys are all there, right there in the same room.
I am excited to be back because I found out a thing that I really wanted to share with her. Maybe you know this, but like, and maybe you've heard of this before, but I just found this out and I am blown away, especially because I feel like this might come up on trivia someday. The song "It Must Have Been Love" by Roxette.
But it's right.
That's the one appeared on the Pretty Woman soundtrack. That's how it was released.
Okay.
That song was originally written as. It was a Christmas song.
What?
You will never believe this unless you already know this. That song was originally written and released and was a modest hit in Europe in 1987.
They're from Sweden,
yes,
right?
They're from Sweden. And the song's original title was "It Must Have Been Love, parentheses, Christmas for the Brokenhearted."
Oh.
And it was originally written by them because they want it was a sad Christmas song. Yeah, it was supposed to be like an adult Christmas song or like an intelligent Christmas song. The only lyric change is in the second verse she sings in the song that we know she sings "and it's a hard winter's day."
Okay.
And in the original version she sings "and it's a hard Christmas day."
Wow, you really don't have to change much.
No,
I thought you were going to say it was called "It Must Have Been Doves."
It must have been Dove Beauty. Bars.
Parentheses. Santa's Lament.
Yeah.
So if anybody ever asks, and they might, "It Must Have Been Love" by Roxette was originally
a Christmas song. Sad and not festive Christmas
song. That's the idea, I guess.
Yeah.
It's called "Christmas for the Brokenhearted."
You know what? Good for them for repurposing their song and turning it into a hit, not having to be tied to a holiday.
Maybe
they were
trying to make it like a perennial thing. Like
release like 12 different versions and then substitute whatever the holiday
is.
Summer jam version.
All of those Christmas songs every year they get played. The Mariah Carey song. My whole life. It hasn't been my whole life, but it feels like every year for...
That's a darn good song, though.
It's a really good song.
The crazy part is... Okay, yeah. So I fell on a Roxette wiki hole after this, as you do.
Sure.
She got brain cancer in the early 2000s.
Oh, the lead singer?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But she beat brain cancer, and they still go out on tour. I think they actually just stopped touring in like 2016.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So here, I'm curious, since we haven't been back for a while.
We still have
Good Job Brain on the brain, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the recent wiki holes you fell into?
I fell
into Zelda Fitzgerald. Well, it was a whole Zelda thing. It was like the game. And then I read, the synopsis for every game. Then I read about, was Zelda's named after Zelda Fitzgerald? And I fell into that hole.
Did you watch the Amazon show?
No, but I then read the episode summaries for all of that show.
Of course.
It's funny that you mentioned that. At first, I was like, well, what have I? Oh, no, no. I've been reading a lot about recently about medieval fortress defenses, like castle defenses. Like, it's actually – I started off – you know what? It started off so innocently. I was just researching the arrow firing slits that they cut in the castle walls.
What are they called?
That's immaterial for the conversation. Okay. But, I was just looking into those other types of fortifications in the walls, like built for specific weapons. And then from there, I just fell into another
weapon holes.
All kinds of just catapults and crazy. The one that I love the most is the giant bows and arrows that are basically the guys would lay down on their back.
Oh, yeah.
And like you string it with your feet and your hands and you fire it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Man. That's good for core.
It is. It's good for core. Yeah.
It's like a rowing machine.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
I was reading something about these shrimp that make little bubbles that pop and make a spark of light when they pop.
Oh. Pistol shrimp?
Because somebody was like, oh, we don't know why this happens. But people do have a reason, like a theory why, but I don't know enough about science to be able to tell you what that reason was.
Knowing nature, it's either related to getting food,
defense.
Reproduction, or defense, right?
I don't mean the motivations. I mean how.
Oh.
How are they making bubbles
they don't even know
emit
how
light
it,
like that?
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just saw a tweet from somebody that took a picture of their biology textbook, and it's talking about the hypothalamus, and it's like the hypothalamus is directly associated with, major life survival functions, which are colloquially referred to as the four Fs: fighting, fleeing, feeding, and mating.
I've heard that before.
Fornication.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
that would have been better.
Yeah, there you go.
That would have been better. It kind of adds like
3 F's and 1 M.
You guys might be aware of this. We wrote a book, and it is out for sale. And since we last graced the internet airwaves, we've been getting a lot of positive feedback from our fans and our listeners. So thank you to everybody who's been sending us some love. We really appreciate it. And you can find our book wherever fine books are sold.
Yeah, I found one at a Barnes & Noble's in McLean, Virginia.
I heard about this.
In the store.
Yeah.
That's awesome. See it there
it
on the shelf.
Only in the one in McLean, Virginia. Yeah.
Well, that was just so happens I was in that mall because I was in Virginia to visit my sister for the holidays.
Oh, no. Now I have to go to the bookstore.
Yeah. So what you can do is you can go to the online versions of physical bookstores. You can see if they have it in stock.
Oh.
And it's a game to see if you can find it.
I'm going to stand next to it for a really long time.
So what I did was I propped it up. Because, you only see the spine, so I kind of made it, feature.
I should put a post-it on it, wow, what a great book.
Yeah.
It recommended.
Yeah. Anyways, without further ado, now that we're back, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hotshot.
I hope I remember some trivia.
Yeah, man. Everybody have their Barnyard Buzzers, and I have a random Trivial Pursuit. Oh. A card from our box. Actually, during the break, because I had to move to a new place to live, I called a lot of the Christmas stuff out of, in our big, giant trivia box, there was, a lot of, Christmas trivia. I kind of cleaned up some. So now the trivia box is maybe, 8 pounds versus 13 pounds.
Okay.
That's a lot of Christmas.
5 pounds of Christmas cards.
There's a lot of Christmas.
Wow. Yeah.
You know you're serious in the trivia game when you measure your Trivial Pursuit cards in pounds.
It's random from the box. Here we go. Right.
What edition is it?
Entertainment singles.
Ooh.
Oh. So, single people?
I still don't know what that means.
I think one-offs. I think it's all entertainment.
All right. Yeah. Okay. All
here
right.
we go.
Okay.
Blue Wedge for TV. What 1970s TV series featured a weekly presentation of comedy playlets starring big Hollywood names such as Phyllis Diller, Milton Berle, and Sonny and Cher? Hollywood. That was Dana.
Laughing? No.
No.
Colin. Love American Style?
Yes.
Okay.
I've never heard of this. Pink Wedge for music. What member of all-girl rap group TLC died while filming an autobiographical documentary in Honduras? Dana.
Lisa Left Eye Lopez. Lopez.
Correct.
Lopes.
Yeah.
Lopez. Lopes.
Lopez. Spelled Lopes. Yellow Wedge for movies. What 1985 Akira Kurosawa film was loosely based on Shakespeare's King Lear? Chris.
85?
85.
Dreams?
Incorrect.
Ooh.
Colin.
Was that Ron?
It was Ron.
That was
correct.
Huh?
Oh, I only watched that in school and was kind of traumatized because it was a lot of blood. It was a lot of fake blood. Games. Purple for games.
Okay.
Which game did Alexander Cartwright invent in 1845?
Ooh.
So it's in entertainment.
Entertainment. Game. Well, I mean, just a, you know,
okay.
Board game.
All right.
1845?
1845.
Which game did Alexander Cartwright?
I feel like we must have talked about this person at some point, right?
Maybe. Read well, it's like it's not him? It's not Monopoly. It's right. Not like.
It's not Scrabble.
No. Well, that's not a board game.
Oh, it's not a board game.
Is it like a puzzle?
Okay.
Or it's a physical game.
1845.
Oh.
It's not.
Oh, no.
Oh, Chris.
No. I was gonna say basketball.
No,
but it's not.
That's James Naismith.
Yeah,
it's not basketball. It's not baseball.
Soccer.
Is it a common game?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm.
Chris.
American football.
It is baseball.
Baseball.
I don't know who he is.
Alexander Cartwright.
Alexander Cartwright.
That feels like a real trivia question we should have known the answer to.
Who invented baseball?
Well, I mean, look, I'm far from like Mr. Baseball, but I thought baseball had like was murky origins. I thought there were a lot of competing claims
like proto
origins of baseball. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to stake my trivia reputation on that.
Hit a ball with a stick.
I want to investigate.
Yeah. All right.
Alexander Cartwright.
We all have some homework
to
do.
We have not talked about that before. That's a good one.
All right. Green Wedge for B.O. Book. What Christopher Isherwood book is the basis for the musical Cabaret?
Oh. I did not know.
Bill Collins.
I couldn't even. I think I've just seen the TV movie version of Cabaret.
Cabaret, the novelization.
Yeah. Chris.
Is it something to do with Sally Balls? Like, is it
no, it is Goodbye to Berlin.
Goodbye to Berlin.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, I've definitely heard that at some point in my life, but
Punch
I wouldn't have been able to pull that.
Okay.
No, not even Punch Bowl. Like,
no.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Last question, Orange Wedge for Wild Card. Where was the first Miss America pageant held in 1921? You should all know this. Colin.
Oh.
I think Dana was first.
Oh, sorry.
But,
Dana.
Atlantic City?
Yeah!
Okay.
Thanks to Monopoly.
Okay. I was thinking, all right, trick question. Nope, play it straight.
That's also a good wiki hole. I have all... Okay, now I'm like able to remember more Wikipedia pages I've read
before. Monopoly?
No. Miss America.
Oh.
Fascinating.
So here... I should have said this before we record when we play trivia.
Yeah.
So we have to remember the Monopoly board. That comes up in trivia all the time.
What color, what three
properties.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I remember in making a mental note is the color of pool.
That comes up
billiards
a lot.
Billiards ball to number.
That comes up a lot.
I know one and eight. The other one's a little fuzzy.
The patterns are the same at least. You know, the one through seven is the same as so nine through the, yeah.
Just remember 15. Next time we got it.
And you hit the white ball.
We got to have it. It's mnemonic, that sucker.
It's hard. I mean, I think we tried once. Anyways.
It's hard. Okay. Well, before we get started, Karen and guys, I have a quiz / news related update for you. On a recent episode of the show, I had a quiz called, I believe, We're Number Two.
Yes.
And
second place.
That's right. Famous people, places, things that are number two, second place. And I had a question on there of the players who hold the second spot in record for most Grand Slam singles titles by a women's tennis player.
Okay.
And at the time that I asked the question, there were two women who held the number two spot, Serena Williams and Steffi Graf, second to Margaret Court. But Serena Williams this past weekend just won the Australian Open women's title. She is just incredible. She keeps on rolling. So she is now all alone in second place. One title. That's right. So Steffi Graf is now in third on the list of most
Okay.
Grand Slam singles titles. It's a 24, 23, 22.
Oh, my God.
So she's got one more to go to tie.
For first.
And then that's right. Two. And then she
or
will
two
be
to do true first.
Two to be the true. She's already the leader in the what they call the open era of tennis. But Margaret Court, you know, who played before the open era, where there were rules about professionals and amateurs.
Yeah.
She's got one more. But, yeah, I will keep updating all right. of you, dear listeners. Now I feel obligated.
That's a very trivia, like superlative that you have to know.
Mm-hmm. I think she'll do it. I think she will catch and then pass Margaret Court. Yeah. So.
Just like, I mean, now it's like the World Series. Now everybody has to recalibrate and be like, oh, yeah. Now who's the second longest drought.
For real. Yeah.
Texas Rangers.
Oh, good job.
All right. This week. I have
a question for you, Karen.
Yeah.
Okay, ready? Are you ready?
Uh huh.
For your riddle. Okay. All right.
It's a riddle.
It's a riddle. It's a riddle for you, Karen. What is a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
Nay, ye think it be the R, but 'tis the C.
I liked it.
It's pretty clever.
I was like, oh yeah, he does. He says R when he's kind of upset usually.
Right.
It's because it's not his favorite. His favorite is R is when he's mad.
Yeah.
And that is today's topic. At sea, under the sea,
of pertaining to the sea,
to the sea.
That's right, Karen. This week we're setting sail on the HMS Trivia.
Even the sturgeon and the ray, they get the urgent start to play. We've got the spirit, you've got to hear it under the sea. Each of the clammy in his pajamas under the sea. Each of the sunlit cutting the budget under the sea. Each of the snail, you know, everywhere.
I will start us off here on our sea voyage. I have a grab bag quiz for you guys called the C word. And
sure.
I, of course, mean C-S-E-A. Yes. The name of this quiz is the C word. All of the questions or answers.
Chris is dying.
All of the questions or answers in this quiz will be have the word C somewhere in them.
Okay.
So that may be a hint. It may just be a convenient hook for me to write questions related to the C. So get your buzzers ready.
All right.
And here we go. Specifically, what kind of animal are sea monkeys?
Oh.
The novelty pet, as advertised in the back of many comic books over the years. Chris, I believe, was first.
They are a brine shrimp.
Correct. They are brine shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, I mean, I know we've talked about them in passing on the show before. They are pretty cool. You have to admit that, like, an animal you can just dry out and they'll just sort of go into stasis and you reanimate them with water.
Yeah. No, the cartoon for it, no. Like, built it up too far. Like,
there's like
a king and
stuff.
A queen and they build a castle.
Right, they go to school.
No, like, they really set you up for disappointment. It is cool. They should have just been like, you can reanimate these
they
animals.
They look like flies in water.
Yeah, I bought them. I definitely had them as a kid. And I was definitely disappointed when I got them. And I think after, like, maybe a day, I was, like, done with them. I'm like, I don't care about these sea monkeys anymore.
Even if you say that, they're like, even as a kid, they're like, oh, it's brine shrimp. You're like, oh, cool, it's going to grow up to look like a shrimp. And you're like, it's not going to fit in this tiny little plastic tank. But I have also fell down that wiki hole about
sea monkeys
and how it's like some dude found out.
Do you know what they were originally called before they came up with the sea monkeys name?
Shrimp friends.
Oh.
It was
shrimp farm?
Oh, no, okay. They were called Instant Life.
Oh, yes.
I like that better almost.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite as vivid a picture, though.
You know what, but it would set you up for less disappointment.
It's true.
It's more
You're
true.
Like, okay, that's alive.
Yeah.
I get it.
But I thought they were going to be monkeys. Like, I really did.
I really imagined,
like the snorks
that they might
like,
build their own little castles, like as shown in the ad, you know, this,
feed them some bananas.
They have costumes.
Yeah, it's strict.
Instant life is good. Play God. Yeah. Hold their tiny face.
Crush
in your
them
mighty
between
hands.
Your
yeah, right.
I know you guys are not big horse racing fans, but you have surely heard of the legendary champion racehorse, Seabiscuit.
Yes.
He thrilled America during the Depression. What is a Seabiscuit? What is a Seabiscuit? I'll give you a little hint. It's a slang term. Seabiscuit. This is clean for air.
Oh, okay.
This is clean for air.
Okay. Is it like a clam or an oyster or something?
No. But it's something that would be eaten out
on the high seas.
Yeah.
It's not like hardtack or whatever that the sailors.
That is exactly what it is,
oh,
Chris.
Oh, okay.
Yes, a sea biscuit.
That's what I thought it was.
Was
your clue? I was like, I guess not.
Yeah. No, it was like sailor slang for like a chunk of hardtack, basically.
Okay.
You know, just this dry kind of
slang.
It's a biscuit.
It's a biscuit at sea. So Seabiscuit's father, his sire, I suppose, in horse breeding terms, was named Hardtack. It was kind of like a little jokey joke with the breeder, you know. It's like, oh, Hardtack's, you know, offspring is Seabiscuit. It's kind of
cute.
Yeah, I like that.
Better than elven bread.
It made me smile. Much like elven bread.
It's called Lembas.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. Yeah, well, right?
It is called Tolkien. You're right.
The Tolkien bread? Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's hard to distinguish parody of extreme nerd versus the real thing.
I mean, it was sincere. It wasn't really a nerdy.
Sincere nerdy moment.
For 11 C's.
What is the only European capital city below sea level?
Ooh.
Oh.
Karen with a guess.
Capital?
Yes.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
Amsterdam.
Yes.
Yeah. Do they have dams to keep the water out?
That city, as well as many other parts of the country. Yes.
The little Dutch boy with his finger.
Yeah.
Amsterdam, Netherlands is Amsterdam, capital of the Netherlands, is 7 feet or 2 meters below sea level proper. In fact, there are only two world capitals below sea level.
Ooh.
And Ooh. I'll give you guys 100 fantasy points here if you know the other one. You might have come across this in your trivia travels.
Is it Jerusalem?
At a staggering 92 feet below sea level, it is Baku, Azerbaijan. Not in the punch bowl. Yeah, the only two world capitals below sea level. Yeah, Baku and then Amsterdam.
Baku is like way below.
It's pretty substantial. Yeah, as I say, you know, 92 feet. It's the largest city below sea level as well. It's its other claim to fame.
John.
Yeah. Baku is... I don't know. There's no mnemonic there. I guess that's either...
Well, A, B, Azerbaijan.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go.
Wow.
If you were served Patagonian toothfish in a restaurant, you probably ordered it by what alternate marketing name? Karen.
Chilean sea bass.
That is correct.
Oh, that sounds a lot better.
Yes.
It is
the Patagonian toothfish.
Oh, that makes it Patagonia.
Yeah.
That makes sense for Chilean.
And, you know, it is caught partially, at least in waters off of the coast of that part of the world.
I remember reading that Chilean sea bass isn't even bass.
It's
neither a bass nor Chilean.
Is it
from the sea.
Yeah.
It's actually a land animal.
But we like the name Chilean sea.
It's been a trade name since the late 70s. I guess when they were the wholesaler who came up with the name also considered Pacific sea bass.
Not exotic enough.
And South American sea bass.
Ooh.
Like you can see he's getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
No. Chilean sea bass.
Yeah, marketing.
Yeah. I guess also the Antarctic toothfish also is legally allowed to be called Chilean sea bass.
Toothfish yeah, is not a nice name. No, thank you.
Well, yeah, because there's those the fish that have like human-like teeth, and they yeah. look scary.
Oh, those are just freakish. Yeah, yeah.
I don't like it.
Where it looks like they have dentures.
Yeah.
The advertising mascot for this American household staple is a smiling blonde mermaid holding a golden scepter.
Oh.
Karen.
What is Chicken Under the Sea?
So close. Oh. I want to give it to you, but Dana.
Is it Starkist?
No.
Because that's Charlie.
Charlie.
Yeah. You just got the name slightly.
Oh, Chicken of the Sea.
Chicken of the Sea. There you go. Yeah. You got it. That's right.
Chicken
Under the Sea was my prom theme.
Yeah. Chicken of the Sea tuna.
Does the mermaid have a name?
That's a good question. Not in the research that I found. I didn't fall into a wiki hole on the Chicken of the Sea mermaid. She's just their mermaid.
Is she a mermaid or is she a Melusine? No, she's a mermaid.
Chicken of the Sea is older than I thought. Company's been around since 1914.
Wow. Okay.
Dealing that Chicken of the Sea.
I guess they really had to explain to people what tuna fish was.
Honestly, part of their company story was that fishermen really said that albacore tuna was the Chicken of the Sea. Like they didn't come up with that. Who knows? That maybe lost the mists of time. On average, this will be a closest to answer here, so you guys can each give me your own answer if you want.
Okay.
On average, what percent of seawater is salt? What's the salinity percentage? And Chris knows. So we'll all go around here. Right. Yeah. Okay. And I will put on my poker face here. And let's say here, we'll accept a precision of 0.5%. That's as close as you need to get.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We'll 0.5%. And maybe that gives you a clue.
Yeah.
Maybe it does.
It's not 90%.
3.5.
Chris says 3.5%.
2.5.
Dana says 2.5%.
Of water that has
seawater.
To be salt?
On average, what percent of seawater is salt?
10%.
All right. I have a feeling that Chris may have been doing some research because he had it right on the nose.
Oh.
3.5%, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
I looked it up. I was looking. I didn't end up doing anything on this for the show, but I was looking at the Dead Sea.
Got it.
Actually, which the Dead Sea is not the most, they call it the hypersaline or hypersalinated lake.
Uh-huh.
It is not the saltiest, landlocked body of water, but it's close.
What is?
And I forget the name of it. It's some other lake somewhere else. But the Dead Sea is salty.
So
Dead Sea is 15-something percent. I might be getting that wrong, but I do remember seeing 3.5 for the normal. But the Dead Sea, the waves come up on the shore over and over and over again, and it builds salt castles on the shore as the waves come in, and it builds these mountains of salt and balls, salt pebbles, pebbles that
it's
have
like
been
salted
in a river, river pebbles.
Yeah.
And it washes those up made of salt. It's nuts.
That's neat.
Yeah.
I'm feeling salty right now.
Yes.
During the break, we still read a lot of the crazy links and news that listeners and fans send us, and we got this a lot, which was late last year. There was announcement of the first ever video capturing the motion of something called the ghost shark.
I saw that and I thought of you, Karen.
The ghost shark.
Yeah.
And it is a kind of a really rare creature. It turns out, there's a lot of things in the ocean and it's really hard to get video because it's kind of happened by chance.
Yeah.
So this video, it was released at the end of 2016, even though the video was captured a couple years before. Video of the elusive ghost shark.
It was cool.
What's it look like?
It looks like it kind of looks like a smooth Muppet.
It had a very Muppet. Yeah, it had a
what
very
do you
Muppet
mean?
Quality
I need more
to
details.
It.
Like,
kind of bluish
smooth.
And
it's
yeah.
Smooth. Okay.
Yeah, and it has
it's
a
not like
glow.
Animal.
Yeah, no. It looks like it has like a very slimy kind of skin texture.
Wow.
It has beady eyes. Fun fact though, the ghost shark is actually not technically a shark. It is a chimera.
Oh.
Which is also a cartilaginous fish. Like sharks, their skeleton is not bones, it's cartilage.
Okay.
But they are not sharks, they're chimeras. Mm. And it's a, they have their own animal group, which is the chimera. This ghost shark kind of captured the attention of the internet. Not be, it's cool, but because it has a ding dong on its head, it has a retractable, penis-like sexual organ on its head.
It's not just like a stalk, it's a real ding dong.
Yeah.
And the reason I know that it's a chimera because I am working on a book about shark facts as well.
Yeah,
I've been busy with. And so that's why I'm like, it's a chimera. A lot of people, a lot of people knowing that I'm writing the shark book, like, it was like, oh my God, a ghost shark. I was like, technically.
Is it in your book?
It is. It is. Okay.
And, even and though it's things. Not a shark.
And,
the name though.
And, the other thing I'm very, very excited about while working on the shark, I don't want to give any of the shark facts away.
No.
But one of the things I made sure to include, and we talked about this extensively on the show, is Hakarl. Not the hot carl.
No, the Hakarl. The fermented shark meat dish.
From Iceland.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm making a trip to Iceland this year. And I'm going to a Hakarl factory.
Oh, nice.
You're
going
to have some?
I don't know yet. It is described as the most disgusting thing in the world to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not poisonous, right?
No.
No, it just tastes like ammonia, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, and you drink it with aquavit, I believe.
You know what? Yeah. I haven't really.
A lot of aquavit. Yeah.
Why Hakarl is not very favored by a lot of people.
Sure. Very diplomatic.
Yeah, it's because of the strong ammonia and urine smell of the shark flesh.
Mm-hmm. So you want some rotten pee-pee shark. Are you doing a race there?
Yes, I am doing. I'm running the Reykjavik Marathon.
Oh, my goodness.
That is why.
What's the name of your book?
It's called Jossum Shark Quizzes.
I love the name.
There's a lot of shark puns.
Yep.
So get ready. There's a lot of shark puns.
This book has a lot of bite.
It won't bite.
It will bite you.
Take a bite
but,
out
but
of...
But you'll like it.
Oh, I didn't. I don't know.
I'll bite.
I don't know.
I would like to talk about something very germane to this discussion, which is... English breakfast, or the full breakfast, as it is known if you are in England, or possibly Irish breakfast, as it is known as if you're in some parts of the country. English breakfast. We've had English breakfast. It's the whole ridiculous. You go to a pub and you get eggs, bacon, beans, sausage,
right?
Like a half a tomato, and then maybe some other things. But those are kind of the main.
How is this related to C?
Interesting, Karen. Interesting. So, of course, you also have Irish breakfast, as I said, or Scottish breakfast, different regional variations on the same theme of the heart attack on a plate. But there is also Welsh breakfast.
I was just going to ask you about Welsh breakfast.
There is Welsh breakfast from Wales.
Wait, did Colin, did you know about it before?
No, it was just the only one that he didn't enumerate. Like he's like, Irish breakfast, Scottish. I'm like, well, what about Welsh breakfast?
And Wales has... many things in rich supply. The letter L.
Yes.
They have yes.
Yep. Cockles or clams are often a part of Welsh breakfast. Are we there?
Regional.
And there's also something called laver bread.
Huh.
L-A-V-E-R. Laver. Laver bread.
Laver bread.
But they don't say the R because...
lava
the United Kingdom, so you hear like lava bread.
Lava bread.
And then, in fact, sometimes it is cutesily referred to as lava bread. And it is bread made of laver. And laver, as you would know if you lived in that area, is seaweed.
Ah.
Wait, you can make bread out of seaweed?
After a fashion. Seaweed is algae, right?
Okay, yes.
Like photosynthetic plant life that's in the sea.
In the water.
Right, in the water. This comes from the Latin word alga, which means seaweed. Seaweed is not one thing. Seaweed is a big, big, broad term encompassing about 10,000 different species of plant life. For purposes of this discussion, which is seaweed cuisine, seaweed that is consumed as food, we are often, not always, but often talking about a group of like 100-ish species called Porphyra. That's the, I believe, the genus that we're generally discussing. seaweeds from that group are called laver in Wales. They're called nori in Japan. Same group.
Okay. Okay.
So laver bread is, you take the seaweed, you wash the ever-loving heck out of it because it has got all kinds of sand in there. It's yeah. gross. Okay. You wash it, wash it, wash
what
it.
What does it look like?
This seaweed, is the stuff that when the tide goes out, you see it on all the rocks.
Oh,
like
okay.
That's this, the laver seaweed or the porphyra family. Yeah. I think it's porphyra umbilica, and the umbilica is there's one little cord by which it attaches to the rock, and there's
okay.
just one it. Point at which it's attached. And so that's where it thrives, right?
Descriptive.
And that stuff is nori, and that is also laver in Wales. Seaweed's got sand all over it. You take it, you wash the heck out of it, you break it into tiny pieces, and you boil it for a long time. You boil it and boil it and boil it. And then you mash it into a whole paste with, like, you know, butter, salt, and the things that taste good.
Yeah.
Maybe, and in fact, in Wales, they mix oatmeal in with it.
Okay.
And then you have two options, and both of these are called laver bread. You can take that paste, and they sell the paste in a tin in the stores, and it says laver bread on it. You open it up, and it's just a black seaweed paste. And you can spread it on bread and eat it.
Oh.
You can also take it, or like, fry it first in bacon fat to cook the seaweed, and then fry it up, and then eat it.
Uh-huh.
Or you can take sort of a, you know, fistful of this paste and like coat it, like, you know, bread it with oats on all around, and then fry that so it's crispy on the outside and chewy seaweedy on the inside.
So it's not and technically then, like baked and you can, bread.
Yeah,
it's like just,
like a pancake, like a pancake.
Yeah.
And you can eat that. So you can either spread it or you can fry it up as a patty by itself.
Hmm.
And that you will always find that with Welsh bread.
Welsh breakfast.
Oh, that's like an original veggie burger.
I want to go track down like a Welsh restaurant in San Francisco and see if we can get some authentic laver bread.
Interesting if we could actually have that. So similar but different in Japan. And I have to confess, prior to today, how ignorant I was about this, because of course, you know, nori in Japan, it's like these dry sheets of seaweed.
Yeah.
And when they make sushi, sometimes they wrap it all in a sheet of nori. That's the idea. So I'm a huge idiot because I just thought that nori was like a piece of seaweed that they pulled out of the sea and then let it dry.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
And then just cut a square out of.
No, in no way is that what it is. So it used to be like the laver bread paste in Japan up until about the 18th century. They made a paste out of it. They probably put soy sauce in it. But this is really interesting. The way they make nori is exactly the way that they make paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when, Sheet. Once they developed paper making techniques, they went,
you know what else what we could spread thin now?
Like, could make seaweed paper and eat it. And they did. And that's exactly what they did. And so obviously there's like factories that can do this now, but like the traditional way of doing it, which some people still do, is you do everything. You boil it, you know, you mash it up into a paste. And then you
put
like
it on
making
like a
paper
wire screen
like a screen door kind of screen, and then shake it around in the water, make a little sheet of it, and then you put it on a bamboo mat, you stick it up, and you dry it in the sun, and then you have your nori sheets, and then you roast them because the sheets are black at first and they're uncooked, and so you roast them for a couple of seconds, they turn green, and that's how you get it.
Oh
yeah.
So thanks to the paper making technique.
Right. The nori sheets followed from paper making.
Makes sense.
We should have a dinner party of like sheet foods.
Ooh,
like,
sheet foods, right.
Crispy
right.
treats.
Fruit roll ups.
Yeah, fruit roll ups.
Yeah.
Sheet foods. Yeah.
What was it? It was micro surfs, right? Where they got the flat foods, where it's got the foods
it
that can be
door.
Passed under the door.
Yeah.
Fruit roll ups and things like that.
So a few more things. If you have miso soup at a Japanese restaurant and it has bits of seaweed in it, you probably had this at some point.
Sure.
That is not nori. That is probably a different species called wakame. Mm.
Oh, okay.
So that's a different plant.
It's not shredded
entirely.
Nori or it's
not. It's
not
shredded. It's actually just cut up. But this is the seaweed that's actually good to eat, you know, like
slimy
whole,
as it is. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also kelp, which is a different species of seaweed. And mm-hmm. that's known in Japan as kombu.
Oh, okay.
It's for soups. And you would boil it in a dashi broth, right? The miso soup broth mm-hmm. probably had some kombu like boiled in it, but you wouldn't eat it. You'd just boil it in there for the flavor. Mm. Now, I saw that and I'm like, huh, is that where kombucha comes from? Because cha is tea. And I'm like, oh, there is in Japan, there's something called kombucha, which is cha or tea made from kombu or kelp. But that is not what we know of in the U.S. as kombucha, which is the fermented yeast beverage. Totally different. And in fact, confuses Japanese people when they come over here.
I bet.
And they see, oh, yes. Kombucha. Yeah, of
Japanese refreshing drink. Yeah.
There's a big push to get people to eat more seaweed. Because, for example, one sheet of nori has 70% of daily value for iodine, whoa, which is really good. And it's not... A lot of people get their iodine from iodized salt, but we actually don't eat iodized salt as much anymore in America because people are shifting to like kosher salt and sea salt and stuff like that.
Right.
It also has 10% of your daily value for vitamin C. It's a lot of vitamin
it
C.
It is a lot of
one sheet of seaweed.
In an easily harvested.
Yeah. And also potassium, vitamin A, and magnesium. But mostly you're getting a lot of iodine and you're getting a lot of vitamin C.
Okay, I have a quiz for you guys.
Okay.
It is a movie quiz.
Yay!
All right.
Yeah. So the answers to all of these questions are movie titles that have the word C in them somewhere.
SEA.
All right.
SEA.
All right.
I'll save the one where it's hidden for the end.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep,
yeah.
Sure.
It's not even hidden in a crazy way. I saw some ways to do it in like the meanest way where it's like a split between.
That's what I would have done.
I know. That's what you would have done. But it would have been brutal because you had to like really search for it. Anyway. Okay. I'll give you a brief description or a hint about the film and then you buzz in and tell me what it is. All right, kicking it off with kind of a current film. This film is currently nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture.
Oh.
Colin.
That must be Manchester by the Sea.
Manchester by the Sea. This is a 2015 film written, directed by, and starring Angelina Jolie. Karen. Oh. Also Brad Pitt's in it.
Oh. I thought it was called Salt. But I guess I'm wrong.
That was an Angelina Jolie movie.
It wasn't 2015.
That was not, This was the one where they're like the disaffected married couple, right? Yeah. Oh, geez.
And they just hang out. And
I
don't remember.
They're like on vacation.
She wrote it, directed it,
starred
in it.
Oh, yeah. I'm kicking myself when I hear it.
And it has the word sea in the title.
No.
By the Sea.
Yes.
Oh! Yes. All right.
The punch bowl. It was in there.
Yeah.
All right. This is also a 2015 film, and it's about the sinking of a whaling ship called the Essex. And this that story is what inspired the novel Moby Dick.
Oh, yeah. It was with one of the Hemsworths.
Dang it.
Come on, Karen. We can do this together. I gave you the Hemsworth.
It's Thor. Thor's in it.
Chris Hemsworth.
Whichever one it is.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's like vintagey.
The word sea is
very,
in the title.
Very just nautical.
Uh-huh. Don't know.
It's called In the Heart of the Sea.
In the Heart of the Sea. Okay, I can picture the commercial for it.
Oh, okay. Vaguely. So this is like the event that inspired Moby Dick?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The sinking of the whaling ship Essex. So this is a 1999 science fiction horror film, and it's about a genetically modified super smart shark. Karen. What is it?
Deep Blue Sea.
Yes. I didn't even know it was in your book, but
starring Samuel L. Jackson.
Sephiroth Burroughs.
Was he available?
and the Punisher, Thomas Jane.
Can't ask Karen any questions about anything that revolve around sharks.
Shark eggs. Yes. And fun fact, We learned this. We learned this. No, no, no. We learned this a couple years ago. It was Dana's birthday, and we went on a tour to a distillery in Alameda, California, called St. George. They they make Hanger One vodka the absinthe.
Yeah. That was one of the most fun birthdays I've been to. That was a fun
So in that hangar, it used to be a film's props, like special effects crew that occupied the hangar, and they worked on Deep Blue Sea. So in the hangar, in the distillery, they had a robot fake giant shark.
Well, I don't even remember this.
I forgot. Yeah. Well, we were drinking a bunch of stuff.
They drank that day.
Yeah.
The Deep Blue Sea shark that ate Samuel L. Jackson, spoilers.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I like Tia Leone was in that movie, I believe. Anyways. Yeah.
That sounds about right for, what, 99 you said, right?
99,
Yeah, that sounds like Tia Leone, yeah.
All right. Going back 55 years, 1954, this film was adapted from Jules Verne novel of the same name, and it was produced by Walt Disney. Walt Disney himself produced it.
Oh.
Chris.
Yeah.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Contrary to common conception, you know, it's not – this is serious. It's not referring to
the depth.
You are not at a depth of 20,000 leagues under the sea. You are traveling for a distance of 20,000 leagues while under the sea. Yeah.
Yes. Oh. You know, he maybe could have clarified that
in a better way.
Yeah.
More pronouns.
It would have. It would have been
Mr.
real clear.
Mr. Verne.
20,000 leagues. While under
traveling
the sea.
8,000 leagues.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. 4 years later, 1958, this film was adapted from a Pulitzer Prize-winning novella.
Oh. 1958.
Pulitzer Prize-winning
novella. Oh. The Old Man in the Sea.
Old Man in the Sea. Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
I thought if I told you Ernest Hemingway, it would be too...
Yeah, no, that was good. Yeah. That was good.
All right, and then as promised, this is the title. Hidden-ish. It's not about an ocean, we'll say. Okay. This is a 2011 movie starring Nicolas Cage. It's about the Black Plague, ostensibly, somewhat.
2011. Oh,
man, I stopped following Nick Cage's movies after The Wicker Man. Or no, Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider was probably the last movie.
About the Black Plague, huh?
Bangkok Dangerous.
There's supernatural elements to it. A little magic, a little occult.
Oh, whoa.
Karen?
No, he was in Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing.
You're,
but it's not.
You're like... In the ballpark,
something with seal, maybe like seal.
See, I thought it was gonna, I thought maybe like Sleepless in Seattle or something.
No, no.
I don't know. I'm not up on Arnicle.
What
stage.
Is it? Yeah,
Season of the Witch.
Oh, okay.
Did you not?
There's a vague tingling sensation in the back of my
true.
Skull.
Then you can use a lot of seasons.
That's
too.
The bees.
Yeah. Oh, it's the bees. Not the bees.
Bees.
Cool. Good job, you guys.
Thank you. That was good. That was good.
All right. Let's take a quick break and a word from our sponsor. And our sponsor is Penn State World Campus. And if you're a busy working adult or you want to advance your career or start fresh in a whole new field and you want to set your own pace to earn your degree, you can check out Penn State World Campus's convenient, flexible online format. Visit the website worldcampus.psu.edu. And Penn State World Campus has the most top 10 ranked programs in U.S. News and World Report's 2017 Best Online Programs rankings. I remember when I was in high school, I was obsessed with the U.S. News and World Report when you're applying for college.
Yeah. You care about it so much. Yeah.
I remember memorizing the top 25 schools. It's like, which one to apply? So reach your educational goals by visiting worldcampus.psu.edu. And, since we're taking a quick break, I got some Laffy Taffys, you guys.
Yeah.
It's our tradition to guess the Laffy Taffy riddle answers. These are not bad. So this is a not bad one. Matthew J. from Dayton, Ohio. I'm going to reword yours a little bit. What is a feline's favorite thing to read?
A the Meowgazine.
The Saturday Evening Post.
The newspaper.
Newspaper is not bad.
Wow, okay. These are all very good.
All
these, give me more. Give me more. These are pretty good. It's not the answer.
Harry Potter.
Whiskerpedia.
Whiskerpedia. Yeah. It is a catalog.
Okay, all right, but those are all
well, it's like, where does the cat order his toys?
Where did the cat order his balls of yarn from a catalog?
Like, what kind of person just reads a catalog?
That's true. You need a call to action. Okay, this is from David S. from Newburgh Heights, Ohio. Also, where do very smart hot dogs end up?
Where do very smart hot dogs end up? The Wiener's Circle.
Oh, that's good.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Oh, really? Wiener's Circle, man. The Frankfurchen 500.
They cut the mustard.
Frankfurt University.
Their number bun. I don't.
Very smart.
Yeah. Very smart.
Oh. Wait, I like this. I like.
Wait, what is it? Where did they?
Where do very smart hot dogs end up?
They become sausages.
Sausages.
The answer, not bad, is on honor rolls.
Okay, that's good.
I like that one.
That's not bad. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Laffy Taffy.
Ohio kids.
Yeah, we got a whole lot of dose of Ohio there.
Mm-hmm. And welcome back to Good Job Brain. This week we're talking about things at sea. I like how me and Chris, we always end up talking about food, whatever it is.
I want to talk about animal reproduction.
I want to talk about something that now is so pervasive.
Oh.
And it is
Patagonian toothfish.
It is sea salt caramel. A couple episodes ago, Chris, you talked about pumpkin spice latte the pumpkin spice flavor explosion and craze. Yeah. And now we're in a sea salt caramel craze.
Yeah,
however, the difference is Starbucks did invent the pumpkin spice latte. They actually invented a drink.
Yeah.
And the sea salt caramel has a fascinating history of how it became the flavor now. And it's through years and years and years and through history. It's crazy. So just as a quick kind of search on Safeway and on Target online, here are some of the things that are sea salt caramel flavored.
Okay.
Fiber One bars.
Okay.
Safeway ice cream. Walmart truffles. So it is – now we're at mass consumption.
It's candles, lotion, it's everywhere now.
And before talking about the origin, let's just talk about how it exploded. And this is fascinating because there's an article in New York Times about – Center for Culinary Development. And this place is right here in San Francisco. And what they do is they analyze flavor trends.
Food trends.
Yes.
I like it.
So they have they use what you call a five-part trend map to kind of map the boom of a flavor. And so these are the five stages. So stage one is very, very specialized, usually these flavors. And we've seen this with other things like wasabi, Asiago cheese. They all start from very, very either ethnic food markets, in a market not in store, but as in like the landscape, or very, very fine dining specific places that not a lot of people know.
Sure.
So that's stage one. So stage one of sea salt caramel comes from France. Kind of a traditional thing, but recently what made stage one boom was Pierre Hermé, who was a Parisian pastry chef. He made the French macarons, and he made a salted caramel flavor.
Okay.
And that kind of started being written up, and there was like a little bit of a gourmet following.
What year was that?
This is in the 90s.
Wow, okay.
Sea salt caramel has a older origin, which I will get to, but I'm just talking about in terms of like the boom.
And there was also, a broad boom of the sweet and salty, just in general.
Yes. And I'll get to that.
Oh, all right.
And so in the 90s, then a lot of the pastry chefs and chocolatiers kind of started using this flavor, but that's still, we're at the high end, kind of hard to reach market, right? That's stage one.
And we talked about this, how this is the cycle that these flavors and foods go through. Like, I think we talked about Jell-O molds on a previous show, talking about how, like, it used to be an aspic You know, like getting served a Jell-O mold at your table was like the finest of fine dining.
So stage two, demonstrated by the flavor or the food item, in this case, the sea salt caramel, into high-end food shows and awards magazine. High-end. So in 2000s, Gourmet Magazine published a recipe for sea salt caramel. Okay. It showed up in specialty food trade shows.
The fancy food show.
Yeah. Then stage three, that's still in the specialty area. Then stage three trickles, it becomes a little bit more available. So now more specialized store, but you can find them more often, like Williams and Sonoma, New York Times listed Cheesecake Factory. That's like, it's chain, but it's still more, a little bit more exotic or inventive. And so they start serving sea salt caramel flavor. Stage four, this is the key stage of the boom. So then it's an appearance into a mainstream women's magazine or a larger chain restaurant.
Interesting.
Specifically calling out Starbucks. Starbucks is a high stage four. So by this point, Starbucks released the sea salt caramel latte. And then stage five is now you can buy it at Walmart, at Safeway, at every store. It might be you used to have to go to Williams-Sonoma to buy it, but now you can go to the
store brand ice cream.
Yes, Fiber One bar is now
it becomes a flavor variety of other things.
Yeah. So it's a five-stage thing. I don't know if you guys ever watched Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
There is that really awesome scene where they talk about the color blue of the sweater she's wearing. It's like a whole kind of a rant on that. It reminds me of
and
that.
And it's the same thing. It's like that started with this fashion designer at this fashion show, and it trickles down.
She's like, I know exactly what year your sweater is.
And you're right, Colin. The sea salt caramel is also kind of characterized by the parallel rise of high-end salt.
The Himalayan salts and the pink
salt, the pink Himalayan, or harvested from the coast of England. This specialized salt became kind of big and becoming a gourmet thing. And then also salt on chocolate. That was also very big.
Yes.
So kind of it all kind of converges. Now, where did it come from? Like, we know how it got popularized, but where did it come from? Who invented it? And actually, it's a pretty recent, quote, invention. And this traced back to the 1970s.
Oh.
Yes, there is a chocolatier, Henri Leroux, studied in Switzerland, and then he moved to Brittany, France, a region in France. Brittany, it's a northwest kind of peninsula-y, you know, very close to England. Mm-hmm. He opened up a chocolatier shop. And he was trying to find out like a product, like maybe a sweet that differentiates from all the other sweet shops in that area. And so he was just like, well, I'm in Brittany. Brittany is famous for their salted butter. So why not highlight that local ingredient? That makes
sense. Wow, that's
cool. Yeah, that's a natural
caramel.
Fit.
Yeah.
So this is in the 70s. And after testing, Henri Leroux made Caramel au beurre salé, salted butter caramel.
Oh, of course, because caramel itself, it has a lot of butter in it.
Yeah.
So he's using the salted butter, making the caramel with the salted butter dry.
And he won awards for this treat. And so this is, we're pinpointing that this is a person that, you know, we actually have documentation that invented this item. Now, let's travel back in time even more. Why is there so much salted butter in Brittany? Why is a big deal in Brittany? Mm. And this is crazy. This dates back to the 1200s. Louis the Ninth established a salt tax or a salt duty so they can control salt. This lasted until like the 1940s.
Whoa.
The salt tax.
The salt tax, the Gabelle salt tax. However, for the salt tax, different regions of France got taxed different ways. So your more metropolitan cities like Paris or, you know, areas got taxed a lot more. But there were some areas that were exempt from salt tax, including Brittany. So this whole time, Brittany did not have to pay
Well, they probably had
so they're just like rubbing
salt.
Everybody else's face in it.
And they had their own a lot of sea salt.
So like, because I can just go to the beach at night. Like, yeah. You're never going to know. Like,
yeah. So because they're off the coast of the Atlantic and they had a readily available amount of salt. And so Brittany became famous for their salt and hence salted
showing
butter.
Off.
Yeah, it is. Kind of just show it off.
We, you know, salt. Yeah.
So I'm going to sit down for a delightful glass of salted wine.
Goes back to Louis the Ninth. Trying to make some extra money to have more.
Making some extra money.
To have for France's wars.
Yeah.
And this royal control over salt. Yep.
Yeah. Easier way to consistently get money from people.
And it's interesting. Yep. People did not. And because of the tax, people didn't consume that much salt.
Right.
Except they're just like, well, we'll do without.
Like, yeah.
I'm glad you didn't say that the origin story was like the saltwater taffy supposed origin. Oh, the ocean swept all this salt into my caramel. And it's what a taste treat I've discovered.
Oh, my God.
This actually has salt.
I like this. Yeah.
This is more saltwater taffy than saltwater taffy.
It is. This is honest.
This
it
is comes what by, I wish saltwater taffy yeah, was.
Totally.
But yeah, so that is from 1229 to 2017, from the salt tax to Fiber One sea salt caramel flavored bars. Yeah. That's where we are.
I just want to know who was the first person who dipped a French fry into their chocolate milkshake at McDonald's, because that person is
genius.
Or at
Wendy's.
I wonder what the next food trend's going to be. Like, you were like, oh, the next one's in the pipeline. I remember, I think I got sea salt caramel at Tier 2. Because we were in San Francisco. It was like early 2000s.
It's a little bit hard for us because we're a little bit weirder.
Like, we'll eat lots of stuff. Yeah.
Trends also just come and go so quickly here, too.
It's like, hard.
We might be churning through a bunch of stage twos and threes without even knowing it.
Jackfruit is becoming big because it's now used. I mean, like, I've talked about jackfruit on the show before about like the crazy sticky glue.
And your mom trying to hack one apart.
Now they use like unripe jackfruit for fake meat because it kind of is stringy.
Really?
Yeah. So like barbecue places in San Francisco, now they're vegan. Instead of like a tofu or something synthetic, it is just unripe jackfruit.
Ooh, that might be a
stringy
thing.
Yeah.
You know, sriracha was one like that we had like a long time ago, like in college. Yeah.
So I had a really good time doing those Laffy Taffys with you guys. So I decided to go on the internet and collect a whole bunch of stupid sea riddles.
Yeah.
That's how you started the show. Guys.
That is how I started the show, and it's the middle of the show, and it's how we're going to end the show. So I've got one last sea-related thing for us, which is a bunch of those Laffy Taffy-type riddles, but they're all about the sea and fish and whales and sharks.
Okay.
And
we're putting our heads together.
I think you guys are putting your heads together to try to come up with better answers than the real answer, but then ultimately try to figure out the quote-unquote real answer.
All right. I mean, who's to say? Really,
and a variety of different sea-related web portals.
All right.
We'll start. I mean, I've tried to start easy and go hard, so we'll see how this goes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Where does seaweed look for a job?
Where does
seaweed look for... Karen. Oh.
The kelp desk?
Nah.
No.
Kelp wanted?
Yes. Yeah. The kelp wanted section.
Yeah. Oh.
I was close.
Yeah, basically. All right. Why is it so easy to weigh a fish? Colin?
Because it has its own scales.
Because it has its own scales. Because it's covered in scales.
Yes. And it's something scales. Scales. Yeah.
There's actually a lot of riddles, the answer to which is, because it has scales. Why are fish so musical? Okay. What do you get if you cross a fish with an elephant?
Fish. Oh, fish. Swimming trunks.
That's it.
Swimming trunks.
Good job.
Swimming trunks. Yeah.
Teamwork.
Trunks.
What can make an octopus laugh?
Tentacles.
Being tentacled.
Tentacled. Tentacles.
Yeah, that's
it. Wow.
Tentacles.
Tentacle. Oh, tentacles. Okay.
Tentacles.
That's slightly more clever. Yeah.
Right.
Eight tickles.
All right. Why didn't the pair of oysters share their pearls? Why didn't the pair of clams share their pearls? They're on separate beds. Shellfish. So you're close.
Well, I want you to really listen.
Selfish.
Why didn't the pair of oysters share their pearls?
Something like two shellfish.
Okay.
We're pretty good.
We're at least as smart as children.
Okay, now we're trending into bad jokes, which may have better... Okay. How do you catch a school of fish?
Test, paper, catch.
Net, bus, trap, pop quiz.
Interesting.
School bus?
It's got to be something with net.
Or hook, when they're playing hooky.
Oh, that's not bad. Playing hooky. Get them when they're playing hooky.
Catch them when they're playing hooky.
That doesn't really connect.
Because hook is for one fish, not a group.
Right, yeah. But neither does the real answer either. Okay. So, I mean, anything you come up with might actually be better.
Homeroom? I don't know.
What is it?
I'll tell you the ridiculous answer that I found. It is, how do you catch a school of fish? With a bookworm.
Oh, it's like one as well.
It's not going to.
That's not bad.
It's okay.
I wish it's not great. It's not great.
You catch with a worm, you catch one fish. You don't catch a whole school.
Yeah, it should say with bookworms.
Right, with bookworms.
Yes, yeah. That's good editing
on
that.
Yeah.
Maybe this is in Karen's book. It should be in Karen's book. I don't know. Hey, why did the shark spit out the clown?
Because he tasted funny.
Arf, 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 arf.
I mean, just as an aside, that could be why did the lion, alligator, like anything spit out the clown.
Absolutely, right?
So, you know.
But then it wouldn't be thematic.
No, it wouldn't. Yeah. It's true. I'm sorry. I don't mean to pull back the curtain here on the humor.
What does Cinderella wear when she goes swimming?
The glass flippers.
Glass flipper.
Oh, glass.
Got it in one. Flippers. Yeah. Finally, why did the cantaloupe jump into the sea?
Because he
wanted to be a watermelon.
That's good.
Oh.
And that is it. That was the joke. But Karen.
Mine doesn't make sense.
No, I think that's good because he was melancholy.
That's good. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
If it's a bit dire.
Yeah.
And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me. And thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about seaweed. About sea biscuit, about sea salt caramel, about sea movies, the C word, and many other things. You can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah.
Bye.